Hey guys, if you know me, you know I love to travel and you know I love to save money. This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. From choosing the right travel card to dodging hidden fees, Smart Travel helps your money go further. Literally. They cover all things travel finance, like how to plan group trips that don't bust your budget or your friendships. How to maximize points for real savings, not just free bottled water. How to avoid paying for upgrades you won't use, and so much more. They're doing great work over there. Check it out. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Welcome to the Travel Tales Podcast. The winners are the people with the most stories.
One of the great things about traveling is the people that you meet.
I've slept in bus stations, I've slept on people's floors.
And it's already on fire, and then there's just a gigantic, huge explosion, like out of a Hollywood movie.
It's not right or wrong, it's just different.
We hired 10 Chinese prostitutes to come be our audience.
We were kidnapped by nuns in Puerto Rico.
Not a good idea to be high when you're packing. You forget a lot of stuff.
I got swine flu.
By the time you've lived through it, it's just a good story.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Travel Tales Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Siegel. Thanks for listening. My guest today is Laura Canary. And before we get to Laura, here's a few things. Our website is traveltalespodcast.com. And there you'll find photos of the guests. You'll find stories that some of the guests have written, stories that I've written. You'll find links to the guests' social media. You'll find links to our social media. Instagram, we're at Travel Tales Podcast. On Instagram. Follow us there. Get those numbers up, please. That's a cool thing for you to do. We also have a Facebook page. You could follow us there. And while you're following, why not subscribe on one of the streaming devices that you probably listen to this podcast on? We're talking Apple Podcasts or Spotify or iHeartRadio, wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a subscribe, please. And also, why don't you give us a good rating? Because that helps more people find us by boosting our presence and moves us up the list higher, and that would be cool for you to do. If you want to reach out to me and contact me, maybe you think you'd be right for the show or know somebody who would make a great guest. Maybe you have travel questions. Maybe you just want to tell me I'm great. You can write me at traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. That's traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. Laura Canary and I went on a media trip to Vail, Colorado in 2014. She is a travel writer based in San Francisco. She's super cool, and we stayed in touch ever since. She was a guest on this podcast back in 2014. Yes, we were still doing the podcast in 2014, 11 years ago. I can't believe it's been that long. But we have stayed in touch. Whenever I'm in San Francisco, I reach out to her and say, hey, let's do lunch or something, which we managed to do last year. And it's always great to reconnect. Anyway, Laura is originally from New Jersey, South New Jersey, around the Philadelphia area. Just celebrated her 30th year of living in San Francisco. She still loves living there. And she's been a travel writer for 20 years. She seems busier than ever on that front, which is great. When I saw her in San Francisco the last time, she was literally packing to leave that night to go to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. And we talk a little about that on this show. And basically just catch up to all the places she's been in the last 11 years. Of course, we can't catch all of them because she's been to so many places. Her articles have appeared on everything from the Smithsonian to the AAA magazine to every website you can imagine. You can follow her on Instagram at Laura J. Kin, K-I-N. If you want to read all her articles, you can find her on Muckrack, which is a website I'd never heard of before, but it's a great site where writers have all their articles in one place. It's very handy. And we'll have links to all these sites at traveltalespodcast.com. But till then, you can listen to me catch up with an old friend who I love to reconnect with whenever I get the chance. Here's my chat with Laura Canary. Laura Canary, welcome back.
It's been 11 years.
11 years?
We met in 2014, and that was when you interviewed me.
Oh, my God. So it's been since 2014, and a lot has happened. I'm glad we stayed in touch, though.
So am I.
We met in Vail.
We did. We met in Vail. We were climbing a 13er.
With llamas. Remember that?
With llamas. Yes.
Wow. Have you been back since?
I haven't been back. No, it's been a bit, but we both climbed 13ers and then we both scaled Kilimanjaro. So there you go.
Not at the same time, but we did it.
Not at the same time.
When did you do Kilimanjaro?
I did Kilimanjaro this past January.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk to you about that. Now, did you, you're a travel writer, so did you set this up as a story opportunity before you went, or was this a bucket list thing that you've been wanting to do and you did it on your own?
You know, it's kind of funny because I think with, you know, being in the world of travel writers, you meet a lot of people who have climbed Kilimanjaro. So if you're outside of the world of travel journalists, you'll say, I want to do Kilimanjaro. And people will be like, oh my God, that's incredible. That's my bucket list. You say it to somebody who's a travel journalist and they're like, oh, is this your first time? So I always sort of, it was something that I had wanted to do, but I guess I felt like so many people that I knew had already done it. And so it wasn't really on the top of my list. And then I was at a conference and I was speaking to a woman about taking one of their trips, Exodus Travel Company. And she said, what kind of trip would you like to do? And I said, I'd like to do something really adventurous. And she said, would you climb Kilimanjaro? And I said, of course I would climb Kilimanjaro. So that's how it all started.
Was this an all-woman expedition?
It was led by a woman guide. And then there were also some women porters along the way. So we had, I think, 5 women with us. It's really difficult on Kilimanjaro to have an all-women team because there's so few women on the mountain. And our team consisted of 23 altogether of the porters and the guides. And then there were 5 climbers or hikers.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So which route did you take? Were you? I did the one with the huts, so I kind of cheated.
You did the huts, but you went faster. We did the Limosho route.
Which one?
The Limosho. It's the longest one. So you get better acclimated as you go up. But it's also one of the most scenic because you go through so many different terrains and like alpine and forest, rainforest, and
yeah, that's probably the coolest thing about it, that you start in like, you know, jungle rainforest and then you go up into like, you know, regular forest, and then it just kind of gets more rocky and it's just shrubs. And then the higher you go, you're just on moonscape after a while. There's no trees, no nothing, just rock. So how many days was yours?
Ours was 8 total. How many was yours?
It's like 5.
Yeah,
you know, so yeah, that's too, experts will tell you that's too short. Because did anybody get altitude sickness on yours?
So one person did get sick where they had to kind of throw up what they had eaten. Nobody seemed to have bad headaches or anything like that. But truth be told, I had the runs. I had the runs on summit night, which is the worst thing to have. You start at 11 p.m., you get there at 7 a.m., and you're like, what do I do? There is no dignity on Mount Kilimanjaro.
Or any mountain, really.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So, but you got to worry about being dehydrated.
Oh my gosh. I tried to eat something after, you know, I had like relieved myself a few times and I couldn't even keep the food in my mouth. It just kept falling off my face, but I made it. It doesn't matter. I made it. And when I got to the, can't remember the name of the point before the top summit.
Yeah.
The guide said, we're going to take your backpack. And I said, no, you cannot touch my backpack. I am climbing this entire thing on my own the way that I want to. And it was amazing. I thought, you know, passing people as they were going up and I was coming down, I thought, oh, I'm so happy that I'm not you.
Yeah.
But I think it's like, not that I've ever had children, but I think it's the equivalent of giving birth because I can't wait to do something similar.
Yeah. They had the, after you went to the peak and took your photos and did all that, is that when you handed the porter your backpack? It was like, okay, now you can take it back.
No, go back down.
Let's you can do this.
I wouldn't let them touch it the entire way. Oh. And then they actually said they'd get some porters to help me down because, you know, my legs were shot. And I said, no, I'm doing this by myself.
Good for you.
Yeah.
I made it. I remember. Yeah. I kept back and I went to Zanzibar afterwards. And just to kind of chill out. But I remember thinking like, you know, there's fatigue and then there's this. I was like, I think I got a little touch of altitude sickness just because I felt hungover for like 3 days, even though I hadn't drank anything.
Yeah.
You know? So it was just kind of like, this doesn't feel like normal fatigue, you know, it just like ended up just laying around, which I needed it. But I noticed that it really kind of hit me at 15,000 feet. Like that was the number for me, it seemed.
Yeah, I felt like I didn't really notice anything until that night. And I think it was a mix of nerves and just really the altitude. You know, I think my stomach does weird things, even in the air when I'm flying. I know that cabins are pressurized, but, you know, there's a lot of stress right. going on when you travel. And it just kind of showed up on that last night. So.
Oh, go on. This is sexy talk. This is great. So did you tie it in with like a safari or something before or after?
I didn't because I travel so often and it was my 7th trip to Africa. And I had some other things that had been planned along the way. The trip was supposed to take place in October, but it got pushed back until January. But I did do a day safari. I had gotten there a couple days early. So I did a day safari with somebody, one of the other climbers. He had never done a safari, so it was really exciting for me to be a part of that.
Oh, were you at the Ngorongoro crater around there? Was that where you
did? No, it was just right outside of, I'm losing the name of the town that you stay at, but right. It was literally a small park. So it was zebras and giraffes and warthogs and that kind of stuff. But it was very exciting to kind of see it through somebody else's eyes.
That was nice. That's nice. So now that you've conquered this mountain, what's your next one? What do you want to do next?
Well, I am going to the Karakoram Mountains in Pakistan in a couple of weeks. And I was invited based on the fact that I climbed Kilimanjaro. It's the first trip with G Adventures to Pakistan.
Oh, wow.
So I'm very excited to be a part of it. It's myself and another journalist, I think a British journalist, and then a group of regular travelers.
Oh, my God. So how long are you going to be climbing numerous mountains, or these multiple hikes, or is there one big mountain there that I've never heard of?
There are multiple hikes, but the Karakoram Mountains are the second highest mountain range on the planet, and K2, which is the second tallest mountain in the world, yeah. is part of it.
K2, I have heard of.
Yes.
You're going to go on there?
I don't think we're going to go on K2.
Oh,
we'll
God,
be
yeah.
Backpacking for 4 to 5 days, but I hope that we see it.
Okay. So you're going to be there for how long?
10 days total.
Okay. Now give me your flying route. Which way are you going to go? You have to go, are you going over the Pacific through Hong Kong or?
I think I'm going from San Francisco. I'm going on Qatar Airways. So San Francisco to Qatar or Qatar, however
Doha. You say it,
to Doha. And then from there to Islamabad.
Okay, that's the route I took. I'm planning to go to Nepal for the first time in October.
And wow, that's so
cashed in some American miles, and they're partnered with Qatar Airways. So I got to go through Doha to Kathmandu. So we're going to be close. I've never been.
To Doha, have you been?
No.
The airport is fabulous. That's actually the way that I went to Kilimanjaro. But no, actually, that's the way that I went to India.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was just in India. That's the way that I went there. But I'm so excited that you're going to go, I'm guessing, to Everest Base Camp.
Well, yeah. That's the goal. That's the plan. Have you done it?
No, it's on my list.
Oh, well, come join. Come join me.
I'll consider.
Well, yeah. Well, how high are you going to go on this Pakistan trip?
At least 16,000 feet, I think,
boy.
But I'm not sure beyond that.
Now, I have to say Pakistan? You can't say Pakistan? Is that the rule now?
I have been told by a Pakistani that I pronounce it in a very
American way.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you been before? I've never. I've been to India, but not Pakistan.
Yeah, no, I've never been. I'm super excited.
Oh, well, how are things? Are they on the no-fly list this week, or can we go?
They somehow have not made it onto the no-fly list. I am shocked. You know, it's been touch and go. There's been things happening with Pakistan and India, but right now things seem to be relatively peaceful. So we will, fingers crossed on that.
What, is there a visa situation that you had to get to go there?
So I had to get a visa and it was the easiest process ever. I was so shocked. I applied for it. They said to apply for it very early. So I applied for it at the beginning of the month and it's an electronic visa. I got it the next day.
Okay. Now I've told people in the intro that you're a big shot travel writer that I've known for a long time. And so I can't list all the places that you, your articles have appeared, but I'm always surprised, like pleasantly surprised when I see your name on something. Like, I'm still an old guy who gets Westways magazine. And I think I saw your name in one of those. And then, where did you ever write anything for American Airlines magazine or any of those?
Yeah, I used to write for American Airlines all of the time. I had two cover stories with them, maybe three, but definitely two. And that was really the beginning of my writing career, was with them.
Oh my gosh. So recently you did, I know, Smithsonian. Name some of the other ones you've done.
Okay, yeah. So I'm a regular contributor to Smithsonian. I write for Atlas Obscura many, many times. BBC, Condé Nast Traveler, Via and Westways, so the AAA travel magazines. I'm trying. It always kind of goes out of my head, but they're probably the main places that I write for.
Yeah, I'm just excited to see about anything printing on paper and not online. I mean, that's pretty, like, I still get the Westways mags. I'm sure I could get it, like, you know, digitally, but for some reason, once a month, I kind of like that thing showing up and flipping through it.
That you have that. Yeah. Actually, I'm writing some in-print things for AARP. So that's...
I wouldn't know anything about that, Laura. I'm 39 years old. Thank you very much.
Okay.
How is it as a travel writer? We know things change all the time. And so much of it's gone online, and you've been doing this a while. What's the latest? I mean, should people get into this anymore, or are you a last of a dying breed, or is the profession still going? How is it?
I think it's still going. I'm doing a lot more content writing, so I do a lot of partnerships with Smithsonian and Atlas Obscura, and then local tourism boards. I just did something with Visit Williamsburg and Atlas Obscura and places to visit in Williamsburg. And that's actually been really lucrative and really interesting for me. I get to learn so much about some of these places. And actually work's been the best it's ever been for me.
I know, you're so busy. I follow you online and I see you all over the place. When you say guides, you mean like the brochure or the travel guide or something like that?
No, it's stuff that's online. So you can just, it's a story that'll say, like, I just did one with Chattanooga. So it's the many places to eat in Chattanooga. And that is a partnership with Atlas Obscura. And they pick the places, and then I research and reach out and find what's quirky and interesting about them. And then we do the partnership.
For people who don't know Atlas Obscura, describe it to people.
It is anything in the world that is obscure, curious, and interesting and offbeat. And they make these incredible guides that you go online and find, you know, what's hidden wonders of certain places. And they also do books that are really, really interesting. And their stories, I just did a story on trail angels. Trail angels are the people that perform trail magic along through hiking trails, like the Pacific Crest Trail and the Appalachian Trail.
They do magic?
They do trail magic, which is basically, you know, you're hiking along this trail, you're finishing up an 18-mile hike, you're exhausted, you come around the corner, there's a little sign that says trail magic, and somebody's cooking up hot dogs and, you know, feeding you because they just want to be part of the action.
Okay, so, I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean like they're doing magic tricks. They can be feeding you. Yeah. Okay, good. I was a little confused there. I was like, that is a bad gig, I gotta say.
If you wanted to stand along the trail and do comedy, I'm sure they would.
Oh my God, what a nightmare. I'm trying to picture this poor bastard sawing a woman in half on the John Muir Trail. That's got to be a nightmare. Well, now that you're like this expert world hiker now, I mean, are you doing any hikes close to home? You're in San Francisco, a lot of mountains to climb there. Do you do long trails? Do you want to do like Pacific Coast Trail and write about it?
I would not be opposed to doing Pacific Crest Trail or the Appalachian Trail. You know, it's definitely something that a lot of people say that they wanted to do when they were younger. I would still do it now. But it's not on the immediate list. I as you know, don't have a car here in San Francisco. So getting out can be a little bit difficult. But whenever the opportunity to do a hike in Marin or the East Bay arises, I am always on board.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So you came back from Africa. I'm hoping your stomach survived the flight home.
It did. It was a little touch and go, but...
So for people who are trying to, you know, you're like a fountain of information for budding travel writers. Take us through like the pitch process of, you know, this time of your life. I mean, do people mostly call you, or do you still like cold call these sites and publications and going, hey, I got an idea or something? How does it work?
So at this point in my life, I can do a lot of two-sentence pitches to publications and editors that I know. And I also do get a lot of work. AARP came to me, which was lovely. But I did just go to India for a couple of weeks. And I am in the process right now of pitching the stories for India. So that requires a lot of thought on the angles of the trip that I took. We got to see tigers in the wild, which was absolutely phenomenal. Yeah, we saw, I think, six tigers. And I have been lucky enough to see jaguar in Brazil, you know, and lions in Africa and leopards in Africa. And so I was thinking of doing a story about big cat travel. And that's kind of a pitch angle I'm thinking of with that. But also, India is a place that can be overwhelming for so many people. And so I went with... a company that I feel like they go away travel. They really organized everything so that it was like you were part of the action, but not too much a part of the action. So they gave you a chance to kind of go into Varanasi and, you know, walk the streets and spend as much time as you wanted. But then you got to go back to a hotel that was very comfortable and you could relax and eat well. 2 weeks in India, never had a stomach issue.
Oh my God. 2 weeks in India took me out. That was the one place that really got me. It was good for you.
Yeah.
That was my next question. It's like you said, you know, you did bad on the mountain, but India, you were fine.
India, I was fine. And we actually ate, we did a street food tour in Delhi, in Old Delhi. It was fabulous. And they provided us with hand sanitizer and hand wipes. And my stomach was fine the whole trip.
Good for you. Yeah. It's not only providing you that the hand wipes, it's the providing the chef with the hand wipes as well. That's that's the different. But you just dropped India there out of nowhere. So wait a minute. How did this come about? And why couldn't you tie in India with the Pakistan trip and instead of making two insanely long trips?
Well, you would be surprised. So I don't know if you remember this about the visa to India, but they are very strict in their visa process. And they actually want to know if you've been to Pakistan. And it's kind of, you know, the two countries are not the best of friends.
Yeah, I just thought after I said it, I was like, yeah, they probably got a problem with going, you know. It's like flying to Israel first before you want to visit the rest of the Middle East. And they're like, nah, don't get that stamp on your passport.
Yeah. So it's a little complicated with that. But I knew about the India trip in October and I took the trip in April. And Pakistan just came up maybe 2 or 3 months ago. So it's one of those things that if I could, I would just tie it all together. I mean, definitely as I continue doing this, the flights can be exhausting.
Right. And I mean, that's what's wearing me out. Yeah. More than anything, you know, I still love travel. I'm still going to new places all the time. I still like discovering new things. It's just the travel. It's the flying, man. It's the waiting in the airports. It's the delays. Yeah. That's starting to get to me and my back.
No, understandable.
Yeah. Have you got enough miles now? Can you bump it up? You ever get upgraded? Come on.
No, because I don't fly on all the same airlines.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've got like a few miles here and there, but I have not been able to bump it up. My God, that is such a good idea, though. I'm going to check to see if there's a way that I can do that for this trip, because I am so not looking forward to the flight there. And especially with 10 days, like India was 2 weeks. And so I felt, you know, ready to come back.
Turn around, you know?
Yeah.
And it's also you lose 2 days going. especially from California. It's just, it's brutal. I mean, we're as far from everything except the Pacific Rim. You know, like Hawaii, we have an advantage. But after that, you know, everything's a gigantic pain in the ass. Oh, man. So India again, you were there for 2 weeks. How did you get around? Was it a bus situation or did they fly you around?
So there were three journalists on this trip and we flew to Varanasi. We took a we had a driver and van for a lot of the trip. It was a very nice van, but we still had to deal with all the traffic and all, you know, the places that we were. And we did take the train from Ranthambore to Agra.
Okay.
So, and I loved that.
The overnight train? Was it overnight?
No. It was just a few hours. But what I loved about it is that we got to, we were in the first class, but we got to be in the train station and really kind of have that train station experience, which was my favorite part.
Which train station? Was it Mumbai?
In Ranthambore.
Okay. Because I was in the big Mumbai train station, you know, where like Slumdog Millionaire and all that stuff was going on. I mean, it's massive. And it's really kind of one of my most vivid memories is, you know, because they separate the men and the women in the cars. And, you know, they're separate cars just for women.
Okay.
And the men would pile out, you know, and it's mostly men everywhere, you know, and just piling in and out of cars. And just, it's India. There's just massive humanity. And then this one car, you know, opens up and it's just these women in these saris that are just all colors, and it was like a black and white movie, and then slow motion flowing. It was just a really stunning kind of visual. You know, I can't really picture it, but it was like a movie. It's like it went from black and white to color when these women just walked out. You know,
it was I love that.
Yeah, but how, you had been to India before, right?
No, I've never been.
Okay, so like you said, Italy or India, I mean, can be. It's overwhelming. You know, it's like every extreme I tell people, you know, it's extreme beauty and extreme poverty. It's still the worst poverty I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did it, you know, first impressions, like how did it hit you? It can sight, sounds, it's like a sensory overload. How did you handle it?
So that's so interesting because I had heard that so many times all through my writing and traveling career. And so I was very almost hesitant to go. I didn't know what to expect. But I liken it to milk. you know, I know, just hear me out. You drink whole milk and then you go to non-fat milk. It is the most jarring experience you will ever have. It's like you spit it out. It's disgusting. But if you start from whole milk and then you go to 2% and then 1% and then gradually make your way to non-fat. So by the time I got to India, I've traveled to so many countries and seen so many places and done so much solo travel that it never hit me the way that I thought it would hit me. It was very welcoming and it was very familiar to me. And I asked one of our guides, I said, you know, I travel a lot and I'm just curious, is there any place in the world, any other place in the world that you would compare India to? And he was a local and he said, have you been to Vietnam? And I said, yes, I've actually just been to Hanoi and crossing the street in Hanoi. And, you know, it wasn't the same amount of people or anything, but it was very chaotic. Like organized chaos is what they call it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. The difference, like I found in, at least in Hanoi and in Vietnam and stuff like that, it's all just a billion motorbikes, you know, that you can't cross. In India, it's motorbikes, it's camels, it's like donkey carts, it's like a cow standing in the middle of the road, it's buses, it's bicycles, it's everything. People walking. It's just, it's crazy.
It's so crazy.
Rickshaws.
Yeah, but if you figure out how to navigate it, it's just part of life. It's just so interesting. So it was actually very fast. I'd love to go back.
Okay, different parts. I mean, I made it down to Goa. I mean, which was kind of cool.
Yeah,
Goa was like a world in itself down there. Was you went to Varanasi? You said.
Yeah, I went to Varanasi. We went to Delhi, Varanasi, Agra, Jaipur, and Ranthambore.
Okay. Now, Varanasi, is that the one where the river is there and they do the sacrifices and stuff?
Yeah. It's where people go to die.
Right.
But for a city of that's known for people going to die, it's very lively and energetic.
Right. So did this story, was it coming out? Can people read it somewhere? Is it, what's going to happen?
Well, I have to sell it.
Oh, okay. We'll be on the lookout then.
Yeah, be on the lookout. So this is the process of my job, like the time where I have time to pitch. And so it's a lot of kind of just really thinking about ideas and starting to write down notes and then walking away from my computer and then going on a bike ride and coming back and doing it over again. And I'm just letting the process guide itself.
Good. When did I get to see you? When was it earlier this year or was it late last year? When was I up there?
It was in January because it was the day that I was leaving for Kilimanjaro.
Right. That was, you were about to leave.
Yeah.
And I snuck in a lunch with you.
That's
in the
right.
Hate.
In the hate.
How is the hate? I mean, come on. You've been there for how many, is it 20 years now?
I've been in my apartment for 20 years and in San Francisco for 30 years.
So happy anniversary.
Thank you. It's my San Franniversary.
Oh, okay. San Franniversary. Oof, boy. How is the city doing? How are you doing in it?
I think the city's doing great. I think that we had a moment. We always have moments. San Francisco is very much like that. Things have been really wonderful, especially the hate right now. The Grateful Dead is celebrating their 60th anniversary. And so we're going to have a lot of like live music here in the neighborhood this summer. And they're going to do 3 shows in Golden Gate Park, which is just an easy bike ride / walk away from my place. So even if I can't afford the shows, I can hear them.
Are we down to 1 member left? Is it Bob Weir still there?
We have Bob and then
we lost Phil, right?
We lost Phil.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Does Mickey still play with them or is
that,
it just
I don't
Bob?
Know. I don't know. Yeah. I'm anti John Mayer, so I can't really go. But I'll be up there this summer. Like I'm catching some ships out of there. I think at least once or twice.
Okay. Let me know when you're here.
Yeah. I always love seeing you if you're in town, but you're never in town.
So yeah, no, I'm actually in town a lot this summer.
What about the Vietnam story? Do you have, did that air or that show up anywhere?
So I went to Vietnam to go to the Sofitel in Hanoi. But then the rest of the trip I did on my own just to kind of, you know, see the country. I'd never been there. And I went from Hanoi to Hoi An. And so I did a story on the former DMZ. I'm a huge fan of DMZs. I don't know. I find them so fascinating. I know it's kind of a weird thing. But so I grew up in South Jersey and there are these 2 towns next to each other. And there was this little buffer area that seemed to not be claimed by anyone. So I would always call it the DMZ.
Okay. I was going to say, I was like, I don't remember any big wall in Jersey that you got, you know. Between you and Philly? Is that what it is? Between you and Philly?
So I would tell my nephew that it's the DMZ. And when we drive through it, I'm like, you could do anything. Like, I didn't even know what a DMZ was. So then I started researching DMZs. And then I went to the Vietnam one. So I did a story for Smithsonian on that. And then because of the jet lag that I had when I was in Hanoi, somebody on Instagram reached out and they said, if you're up early, you should go and walk around the lake and the city. He's like, you would be amazed at how much life there is out there. So I walked outside at 6 a.m. There were people playing badminton. There were tango lessons. There was so much happening. And it was all locals and they were so friendly. And I just really felt a part of the action. So I did a story on early rising cities for Smithsonian as well. Based on that experience.
So you were going there, you said to cover the Sofitel? Were you sent there by the Sofitel people?
I was sent there by the Sofitel people, but I told them I don't cover hotel. That's just not what I do.
That's what I was going to say. That's not up your alley there, I don't think.
No, but they said, we just kind of want you to experience the hotel and experience the city and write about the city.
It's a nice offer.
So I did. Yeah.
My Hanoi Park experience. So the first time I was there, that big city park, it was around the holidays. So I think it was around New Year's Eve. And it was definitely New Year's Eve. It was like New Year's Eve or New Year's Day. And all these parade floats were there because, you know, before the parade. So I was just walking around looking at these floats while they were sitting there. And all of a sudden, this young woman asked, came up to me very shy and asked if she could have a photo with me. And once I said, yeah, sure. Okay. And once other people saw that I was cool with taking a photo, they started coming out of the woodwork. Some guy comes up to me, hey, can I get a photo? And all of a sudden, all these people are taking pictures with me. And I'm just, it always fascinates me because it's just like, are you going to show these to your friends and just go, here's my white guy friend. Look at that. Did you ever get like some stares or?
That happened to me in India. And it was really funny because a man came up and asked to have his picture taken. And his son took the picture while his wife stood off to the side, which I thought was so weird.
Yeah. When I was in India, I mean, and you have dark hair too, because I was there, like in my group, we had a couple of blonde women from Australia. And oh my God, the attention that they got. And people were asking them to hold their babies and like take a photo. And I'm just looking at it, it's like, she's not a witch, you know, she's not the, you know, I don't, but man, reaching out and touching her hair and stuff.
Yeah. The other two women that I was with, one was blonde and one is a black woman with a beautiful curly hair. And I was invisible most of the time.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Was. And I just was like, okay, I'm just going to sit back. So to be honest, when I was asked to have my picture taken, I felt kind of special.
Yeah. Wow, you three were like, you're like a singing group, you know, just like walking through. That's funny.
Yeah.
Man, and you must have felt like super tall, right? In Vietnam.
Did. Yeah, yeah.
Every white woman I talk to that goes to Vietnam says, I couldn't buy anything in my size. I couldn't find anything.
Oh, it's so true. It's funny because I stayed at the Sofitel and then from there I went and stayed at another place in Hanoi. And it was very jarring because, you know, once it was kind of my own, like
dime.
Yeah. My own dime. It was a place that didn't have any windows except for a window that went into the hallway. So you could almost see into the bathroom from the hallway. It felt like an old office building. It was an experience.
Yeah. It probably was an old office building. You don't know.
I think it was.
Yeah. Did you tour Ho Chi Minh's tomb and that kind of thing?
I didn't. You know, I was only in Vietnam for 10 days and I thought that that would be enough time to see a lot of the sites, but I literally was running from place to place. There's so much to see in that country, so much to see and so much to do. And I wanted to take the overnight train and I wanted to go to some places that were a little bit off the map. Nimbing, it's the Halong Bay of inland, or the inland Halong Bay. It's got the karst limestone formations, but it's on land and it's just so gorgeous. And so I wanted to do all that. And I kept finding myself back in Hanoi, but never at a time that I could make it to the mausoleum.
Oh, okay. I couldn't remember. Did you, would your dad still with us, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was he in Vietnam? Did he serve? I can't remember.
So he was drafted during Vietnam, but he was sent to Puerto Rico.
Oh, nice. And, that's some good luck.
Good luck. And so all of this time I was, you know, he's very like, wants to go to all the parades and he's you know, very proud of his service. And so I was doing the story on the DMZ and I went to one of the sites and I signed his name in the book along with my name because, you know, he knew plenty of people that had gone there and he didn't have the chance to fight there. And I'm so thankful for that. But when I started interviewing him for the story, I thought, oh, he would be a great part of the story. I said, were you ever nervous about getting sent to Vietnam? And he's like, no. And I said, Dad, what are you talking about? He's like, it was too early. And I said, okay, well, I mean, were you ever afraid? And he's like, no. And so it was sort of like he kind of got drafted early on where it didn't ever really, it wasn't this big, scary thing for him. And I thought all of these years, I had this idea that my father was like somehow beat out.
Yeah. I went to Puerto Rico, had some rum, chilled
out. He basically worked on a golf course. He worked at a radio station, like did army work at a radio station and then served at a golf.
Thank you for your service. Thank you, sir.
He had it very good.
Oh, my gosh. Good for him. Yeah, it was weird. You know, when you travel through Vietnam and as an American, you know, you see they refer to things. Oh, and this was damaged during the American War.
And
I'm in the back going, yeah, sorry.
I know. Yeah, you know what? I think it's so important to see that when you're at Vietnam.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Coming back too, a lot of people were like, well, I knew a different Vietnam. And I said, yes, I'm very aware of that. And so I wanted to, you know, I also like growing up in the 70s, that's something that you heard about that kind of shaped our childhoods, you know? Yeah. And so I was like, no, I need to experience this. I don't want to just go to these scenic places. I want to hear the history. I want to really kind of dive into to see what happened here.
Right. And we also knew a different Germany and a different Japan and a different Cuba and everything else, you know? I'd like to see it for myself.
Yeah.
You know, and it's weird. The longer you live, everything that was so scary for us that was growing up that they told us, don't go to, you know, Cuba was this scary, horrible place, you know, and then I went there and it was, you know, it's a country.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, and Vietnam. Oh, my God. I was born during the Vietnam War. You know, it just like it was like this scary place. I've been there twice. Loved it.
Yeah.
You know, and there's, you know, clothes in my closet made in Vietnam, you know, so just like, well, we seem to be doing business with them. We have no problem there.
That's true.
Yeah. So how many trips would you say, like how much of your year is spent on the road, do you think, if you had to break it down?
Being from New Jersey and having my family back there, I spend a lot of time back there as well. And so last year I would say I spent 6 months on the road and 6 months here in San Francisco. I know it was a lot and I'm trying to cut back just because of what we said. When I travel, I tend to go far. You know, last year I was in Kyrgyzstan, I was in Vietnam, I was in Botswana, and it takes a toll on you. And so if there's a way to combine those things, that would be great. But a lot of times there isn't. Last year I did New Jersey, went to Botswana from New Jersey. And so I kind of came back, went to New York, did that sort of thing. So now I'm taking bigger trips, but spacing them out more. Right. So Kilimanjaro, India, Pakistan. Yeah.
Because I've talked to many travel writers and journalists here and bloggers and everything else. Burnout is a real thing, you know, and you hate to make this thing we love so much, travel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one thing to make it your job and have to pay the bills with it. So you're going to have to sometimes take trips that you don't want to take.
Yeah.
But you also don't want to ruin it, you know, this thing we love so much.
Yeah. So 2 years ago when I turned 50, I took myself to...
What? No. Come on. What? No. You mean 40. Stop it.
Or whatever.
Or but whatever. Whatever number you want to put.
I took myself to Portugal for 2 weeks. And
nice.
Yeah. And it was just me. I didn't want it to have anything to do with work. If a story came out of it, that would be great. But I just wanted to have my own trip. And I realized that there is a big difference between traveling for yourself and traveling for work. And so now I try and incorporate a trip for me into every year. And last year it was Vietnam, basically. This year I'm trying to figure out what it might be.
So you didn't write about Portugal at all?
No. And then when people in the travel industry found out that I was there, they wanted me to check out their property or they wanted to host me on something. And I said, no, this is me. This is all me. I want to write in the morning and then go for long walks and come back and write in the evening. I want to stay in a treehouse. I want to go wherever I want to go and do whatever I want to do. And when I started to kind of feel like, you know, I'd been by myself for a long time, I've been doing this for so long that I had dinner with a couple that I interviewed for Condé Nast Story, or I saw a friend that I met on a trip in New Mexico who lived in Lisbon.
Right. So where did you and also with Portugal now, it has been found out and everybody's writing about it or living there now at this point. Where did you stay? Did you go start in Porto and move your way down to Lisbon and then down maybe to the Algarve or where did you go?
I started in Lisbon because I was at a wedding here in the Bay Area right beforehand, and I didn't want to be traveling on my birthday. And the wedding was literally like 3 days before my birthday. So I flew to Lisbon, and all I wanted there was a balcony. I got an Airbnb that had a balcony, and I just treated myself for my birthday, then rented a car, drove up the coast, stopped at some of the beach towns, then stayed outside of Porto, took the train up to Porto, came down, saw a friend in Porto. And then I went into the Douro Valley, which is the wine region, because I had found this cute little treehouse that I really wanted to stay in. And I stayed there for a couple of nights. And then I went up to the highest point, the mountains of Portugal. I don't even remember the name of the mountain or anything. And I stayed in a little Airbnb there. And that's where I did a lot of my writing and my just hiking around. And then I came down, dropped the car off in Lisbon, and went to Fatima, being raised Catholic, you know, and going to Catholic school for 13 years. Fatima is a big pilgrimage place. And I felt like I would be a bad lapsed Catholic if I didn't go to Fatima. And it was actually beautiful and quiet and just a really, really nice place to be.
Is that part of that famous Camino thing up to
I don't think Spain? It is. I feel like the Camino portion in
north.
Portugal starts, it's more north. I think it starts near Porto, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it's even like the northern coast there.
Okay.
So was that your first time to Portugal?
Yeah.
Thoughts? What do you think? Could you live there? It's very, you know, it's California. It's very California weather and climate.
Yeah.
And it's very easy.
Yeah, I could live there. Definitely. Sure. I mean, what I wanted to do for my big birthday was maybe do Everest Base Camp or do a huge hike. But it kind of, I hate to say this, it snuck up on me. And because of that, I thought, well, I should just go someplace that I haven't been, that I would feel comfortable traveling by myself. And that's why I picked Portugal.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Where next? What are your, other than Pakistan, I know you do that, but what's else on your personal bucket list? Nothing to do with work. What would you do?
Nothing to do with work. I've wanted to go to Armenia for a long time. If I can figure that out, I would do that. I'd like to go back and see the south of Vietnam. I've never been to Costa Rica. I'd like to go
really?
Costa Rica. Yeah. Okay. Well, I really want to see a sloth.
Well, they're not going to outrun you. You know that. I mean,
that is true. Oh, Morocco. I'd like to go to Morocco.
That's on mine. Morocco and Egypt, I still haven't been.
I'd like to go to Egypt too. Yeah, there's so many places. So many.
What about, so you were in Botswana. That sounds very safari-like. And that's been on my list for a while. How is it different than, say, like other countries in Africa that are down in the region, like, say, South Africa?
So I had been to Kenya, South Africa, and several other African countries. Tanzania now, yeah. But I've never seen lions. I've never seen a pride of lions. Like, and I've been on so many safaris. So I felt like Botswana brought all the animals. Everything was just very accessible. It's very water-based. So you have a lot of water safaris there, a lot of hippos, a lot of crocodiles. Just very pleasant. Where I felt like South Africa, of course, pleasant as well, but it had the urban areas and then it had the safari areas and it had, you know, more of a cosmopolitan slant to it. It was more varied, where Botswana is just water life and just kind of more laid back.
Okay. That sounds cool. Yeah. I've been wanting to go for a while.
Yeah.
That's on the list. It's just so far. Just so far.
But on the way back, I just flew and stayed with a friend in Brooklyn. And that worked out so much better. I'd had like 3 days in Brooklyn and then I came back here.
Okay. So any other DMZs you haven't hit yet?
I'd like to go to the DMZ between South and North Korea.
That's the big one. That's the one all know.
Yeah.
I figured you had already seen that. You haven't seen it.
No, I haven't been to South Korea yet.
Oh, you got to go. It's really cool.
I know.
It's cool. And great food and everything. Okay. Oh, it's cool.
Good.
It's cool. So if you are, you know, you're looking around now, you've been in, you know, San Francisco for a while. You're in kind of in my situation where, like, my mom is in Florida, out east too, and she's in Florida, 90, and requiring a little more attention these days. So I found myself going back and forth a lot.
Yeah.
And I know you wrote a guidebook on Jersey, didn't you?
I did. I did.
Could you ever leave your beloved San Francisco to go back? Could you go?
I mean, I'm always open to new locations. If you had asked me 30 years ago if I would still be in San Francisco, it wouldn't have even crossed my mind. I love it here so much. And yes, I do have rent control, which is keeping me in my place. And I love it. I'm right in the middle of the hate, like we talked about, like next to Golden Gate Park's panhandle. It's amazing. I spend a lot of time in New Jersey. I just spent 3 weeks. I spend 2 weeks in the holidays. I'm actually taking my father on one of my work trips to Williamsburg come September. So that'll be really nice. So I'm getting to spend a lot of time with him. But I don't know if I could make that particular move. I am much more myself here than I am, even though so many of my friends and, you know, I have such a home base back there and I do love it a lot. I don't know. I'm a city girl.
So if you're going to, you said you're taking them to Williamsburg, you mean like Colonial Williamsburg or Colonial, Williamsburg, Brooklyn?
Yeah. No, Colonial Williamsburg.
Oh, okay. It was like you're taking dad to like hipster Brooklyn. I'm like, well, that seems like an odd choice. So who's paying you to go to Williamsburg?
So I was invited by the PR company of Williamsburg to go on a press trip. And I was not able to make the press trip. So he asked if we could do an individual trip. And my father, my parents, my mother passed away 10 years ago, but my parents loved Williamsburg and my father still loves it. And I thought maybe this is a chance to get my father to, one, get to go to a place that he loves, but also experience what I do for work because he, you know, I've asked him in the past, but he doesn't travel very often. And so I said, hey, you know, I have this opportunity to go to Williamsburg. Would you like to come with me? And he said, I'm not going to Williamsburg. And I said, I will fly to New Jersey and we can drive down there. And he said, I can't drive that far. And I said, well, I'll drive. And he said, the car's not going to make it. I said, we could use one of my brother's cars. And by the end of the conversation, he's like, fine, I'll do it. And I know he's thrilled about it. So I asked, of course, the PR person. First, I asked my father, then I asked the PR person. And he's like, yes, of course, we'd love that. And I think it would make a great multi-generational story. It's the 250th anniversary of the country next year. And Williamsburg is obviously celebrating that. And so I think it'll be very, very nice for us to have that experience.
Was he ever like an adventurous guy or is his health keeping him from doing it or what's
my what's dad is the ultimate armchair traveler. Okay. He very much, he lives vicariously through me. He follows. I can tell I go back east and I see that his globe is turned a certain way and it's based on wherever I was the last place I went.
Oh, that's adorable.
Yeah, he loves it very much to kind of follow my adventures, but he's just not been somebody who's ever really been interested, as far as I can tell, in doing it himself.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
Hey, you know, and he's got grandkids there, right? I mean, he's busy.
Yes, he's got 5 grandsons and 1 granddaughter. She's 3.5. His oldest grandson is about to move to Chicago for law school. But he's had a lot of, you know, my brothers both live within 5 minutes of my father. So he's got that.
Oh, he's got to be loving it. What's the first thing you eat when you go back to Jersey?
A Philadelphia soft pretzel.
There it is.
There's okay. No question. My dad will bring them to the airport for me. I love them so much.
You didn't even hesitate. That took like 2 seconds.
No hesitation.
How are they different than other pretzels I've had?
Oh my God, what? How are they different? I actually have a picture that I picked up at a street fair in New Jersey of a Philadelphia soft pretzel that's in the other room. But they're cooked in, they're like elongated figure eights and they're cooked in a one big batch. And so they come out and you rip them apart and they're doughy and they are just the most fantastic pieces of goodness that you could ever have. And growing up in the South Jersey area, which is near Philadelphia, you would have them at school. You'd have them at Little League games and at basketball games, and they'd be sold on street corners in Philadelphia. And so they're such a part of my childhood.
Was your family excited with the Eagles Super Bowl win? Were they?
Yes. In fact, that's the one thing I knew that the Eagles were in the Super Bowl when I was on Kilimanjaro because somebody had a satellite.
Oh.
And her boyfriend told her who was in the Super Bowl. Yeah.
That must have been fun. Wait, so do you put anything on the pretzel?
I sometimes eat it with cheese, and I eat when I, so it's a very weird thing, but when I'm in New Jersey, I eat so much American cheese, which I'm not sure is even a cheese, and I don't eat it at any other time in my life. But when I am in New Jersey, I eat American cheese and Philadelphia soft pretzels.
Well, it's your childhood, you know, you're just dipping into it. So you wrote the guidebook. Tell us, where do people got to go in New Jersey that needs some love, like kind of like no one's ever heard of? Where is your secret spot you send people?
Oh, God. I think the Delaware Bay Shore is kind of an amazing place. It's not the actual Jersey Shore. It comes down into the Delaware Bay. And especially in, I'd say, May, there's a lot of horseshoe crabs that come up onto the sand to lay their eggs. And so it can be covered in horseshoe crabs. I'm not sure if you are familiar with them, but they have this black armor on them. Oh. And they look like these prehistoric beasts with these very long like sword. I think it's a tail or something. I think that's really cool. I just spent a day in Asbury Park. I'm sure a lot of people know about Asbury Park. It's Springsteen.
Your boy, Bruce. Sure.
Yeah. His backyard. But I had the best time there. It's not my typical shore town. I love Ocean City, New Jersey, and I love Cape May. A lot of people know about that too, but the Delaware River area, Lambertville, Stockton, Frenchtown are the cutest places on the planet. And they're a lot quieter. I think a lot of people need to check those out.
Right. It's not like the Jersey Shore that, you know, was made
not
infamous.
At all.
Good.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful state. And I think my father loves to say this when we're driving. He's like, look around. There's no people. It's so green. This is the most populated state. And every time we drive.
Oh, man. That's funny. So you're busy, which is good. That's great that you're busier. You seem busier than ever. Was there a point there was there a year that you thought maybe I would want to do something else? Did you ever COVID, even during the height of COVID, you never went, maybe I got to find another line of work?
I have always been so scrappy that during COVID, there was a month at the beginning, I'd say August 2020, where I had no work, none at all. I had some contract work that had ended and I was like scrambling for things. But then I realized that the more I stay home, the more money I make because I'm actually here to work.
Oh, right.
And I have just a unique way of coming up with story ideas. And I was able to pivot into things like traveling through scent or traveling through food or even like I did the story on bridges of the Pacific Northwest where I got to highlight each bridge for a specific reason. One is where they do base jumping. So I was able to talk about base jumping on a bridge. And another is part of the Pacific Crest Trail. So I was able to talk about that. And I got a lot of work during COVID once things picked up again. And I started, when I get nervous, I start cold calling and I make that move and it always seems to work out for me. So, and one thing I have to say is that, back in 2004, when I first kind of started out in this industry, I really wanted to write this New Jersey guidebook, but I had been turned down endlessly because I just didn't have any professional writing experience. So I knew that the publisher was going to be at this conference that takes place here in the Bay Area. It's called the Bay Area Travel and Photographers Conference, or the Book Passage Travel and Photographers Conference. And I borrowed money from my father and I went to this conference and I told them, I'm going to be at this conference. You can tell them I'm going to be there or I will accost them. And they said, we will tell them. And sure enough, they took me out to lunch. They had me rewrite this book proposal and they were so probably tired of me harassing them that they gave me the book. And that really kind of jump-started my writing career. And I haven't been back to the conference since, but it was just such a fabulous experience. There was Tim Cahill, who founded Outside Magazine, like one of the founders, and Don George, who is this very well-known travel writer. He runs the travel writing part, and Bob Holmes is the photography chair, and Andrew McCarthy has taught there, and Pauline Frommers. And this year, I have been asked to be on the faculty.
Hey, look at you.
Yeah. So I've come full circle.
Wow. So what are you going to be judging other people's writing?
No, I'm going to be on the freelance, one of the freelance panels and talk about what it's like to be a freelance journalist and travel and everything. But It's really exciting for me because, you know, I went there as somebody that had no experience, and now I'm going to be part of the staff. Yeah.
So just the one in San Francisco, or are you going to be touring with it around the country?
It takes place in Corte Madera, north in Marin. And just this one, it's an annual event. But wow. I was speaking with Pauline Frommer, whose father founded Frommer's Travel Guides. And she said it's sort of like a summer camp for travel journalists and photographers. And she said it's the most fabulous thing. So I'm very excited to be a part of it.
Now, is this what you guys talked about when you did her podcast before you did mine again?
We did talk about it a
little. Oh, how dare you? How dare you? I've seen her. I mean, she's always a regular at the like the travel conventions and stuff. She gets around. Pauline Frommer.
Well, what was really nice is that she reached out to me about my article, and I said, actually, I'm going to be on staff with you come August. She had no idea.
That's great. Congratulations. Yeah. Speaking of books, do you have another one in you, or are you working on something?
I think it's time that I write either a creative nonfiction book or a travel memoir or something. We'll see. I don't think it's going to be a guidebook. But definitely, when I was back in New Jersey, I read the ultimate New Jersey book, which is Eddie and the Cruisers. I don't know if you're familiar.
I know the movie.
The movie, yeah. So it's based on the book, and it really has such a great sense of place of New Jersey, especially South Jersey. And I thought, I'd like to kind of do maybe something like this. I've been to so many places and experienced them in so many unique ways that if I can incorporate that into a book, that'd be great.
Well, I'm going to do the standard interview question nowadays with the people. Where do you see travel heading? What are the latest trends you're seeing? People talk a lot about, say, over tourism, or the effect of flying, or certain countries are going to get hot, certain areas. Where do you see happening?
Oh, that is a really good question. I think that it travel should, it depends with everything that's going on in the world right now, but maybe heading more sustainably, where going, as we talked about, going to these places and going for 10 days, 11 days is just not sustainable. You know, being able to go to a place and kind of experience maybe a continent, maybe a big portion of the continent, and staying a little while, and being in places that are more affordable and that you can kind of just blend in with the local culture is something that I've seen happening. And I hope that that trend continues, because I think that's such a wonderful way to get to know a place. I think that so many times we drop in and we come out and we don't have an understanding. You know, so many people come to San Francisco and they want to go to Pier 39, and that's wonderful and lovely. And but it's not San Francisco. You know, you really want to be in a place. And if we could do more of that, I think that would be incredible.
Well, I was going to ask you that. I mean, we talked about Jersey, but now you're the San Francisco expert. If people only have a few days and you don't want them after they see Pier 39 and all that other touristy stuff, where do you send them? Where do you say you should really check this place out?
I mean, I love Golden Gate Park. You know, we've had it. People know about it and everything, but it is such a fabulous place that people might go to the Conservatory of Flowers, and they might go to the De Young Museum, but there's, you know, the Bison Paddy, there's the fly fishing pools, there are the Rose Gardens and the Tulip Gardens, and you could just spend hours within this park. Also Presidio. I mean, the Presidio is the most fabulous meeting of historic preservation meets natural resources. And what they've been able to do with the Presidio, turn it into a place where people come for, there's Lucas Art. You could go and see the Yoda statue and go inside and see the lobby of Lucas Arts is always open and to anybody. They could go in and see that. There's the Walt Disney Museum, which is about his life and not so much about the mouse itself. Mm-hmm. There's a new little parkland that they have great views of the Golden Gate Bridge. It's called Tunnel Tops. And then they have food trucks and and there's a sports basement there too. So you can get all your sporting good needs. and then you can just explore the Presidio.
It really is a beautiful city. You know, people like to make fun of it for this reason or that reason but it is one of the most beautiful cities in this country for sure. And, And it's walkable, which is a huge thing. You know, unlike LA, it's pretty yeah. and walkable, you know, and it's got a train that goes to the airport.
It
which is nice.
Very nice. Yeah, yeah. Especially as somebody, you know, to never have to have a car in 30 years of living here has been a blessing.
And when I saw you last, you know, earlier this year, I saw more Waymos, you know, robot cars on the street than I've ever seen. Are you into the Waymo? Can you do it? Are you doing it?
I've never taken one.
Come on. They're like every 5 feet up there.
I know they are. They're like every other car, but I've just never taken them.
For moral reasons or?
No. I just, okay. So I have this thing where I just don't like to take car shares or, you know, like an Uber or a Lyft during daylight.
You'd rather wait when it's dark and more dangerous? Okay, I got it.
There's something to me that's depressing about being in a car when I can walk or
all right.
take the bus or I don't know.
God. All
right. I'm an odd bird. I definitely
yeah.
am.
Yeah, no problem getting in a rickshaw in India, but a Waymo, you draw the line.
That's right.
That's funny. Well, tell people where they can find you online and read some of your articles. Do you have a website or follow you on social media? Where can they find you?
Yeah, they can follow me on Instagram at Laura J. Kin, K-I-N. They can always follow me on Facebook. It's just Laura J. Kinnairy. Or I do have an updated Muckrack page. Muckrack is a free page for journalists, but I keep mine very up to date. So if you just went to Muckrack, Muckrack, Laura Kinnairy. All of my information is there, all of my stories and everything.
Oh, great. So we'll have links to all this on our site as well.
Okay.
And finally, what do you think all this travel and all the stuff you've seen, especially in the last 11 years, how has it changed you as a person and the way you look at the world and life?
A good question. I think I'm so much more adaptable and open to new experiences, to new food. There's a funny, my old calculus teacher from high school, she was a family friend and I went traveling with her in seventh grade. And she said the only thing I would eat was Reese's peanut butter cups. So she kept giving them to me. Now I will eat anything under the sun. I'm just so much more open to everything in the world. And I think it just makes you just not only a more interesting person, but a more curious person and a more forgiving and understanding person, I think.
That's great. And did you go back and tell that lady that you still haven't used calculus since she made you change it?
I think she knows that from my calculus final, but I was never going to... I was never going to go anywhere with that.
Yeah, just stick to writing. We're going to send you back to English class, Laura. That's what we're going to do. That's funny. Okay, Laura, great to see you again.
Thanks for doing this.
Yeah. And, you know, hopefully it's not another 11 years.
Yes.
And if I'm still doing this in 11 years, you can just come over and kill me, please.
All right, deal.
And I say that with love. Just kidding out there, people. Just kidding. But thanks. Great to see you as always.
Great to see you too.
Laura Kinnairy. Thanks, Laura.
Thank you.
For spontaneous travelers, winging it is the perfect listen. James Hammond shares stories and tips from 75 plus countries. Find it at voyescape.com.